It's like something directly out of one of those B-movies from the 50s. Radiant energy transmitters, implosion vortex engines, cold fusion energy. But a lot of this is already a reality. Yes, there's a lot going on in the search for alternative energy, and a whole lot more going on as to why we don't have it. I'm Richard Lloyd-Jones, and today I'm thinking with somebody else's head, where in the world is all the free energy? Our topic today is a broad one. It encompasses the inversion in science that causes us to look at matter as a source of energy, and so miss out on some more advanced technologies that were started, ironically, well over 100 years ago. We'll also touch into the psychological sickness behind how that intriguing technology gets completely suffocated and blatantly denied us. And a little hint here, the reasons go much deeper than just the maniacal hunt for profit that we normally point out as the culprit in this blatant crime against humanity. Actually, this is a feature of psychoanalyst and social scientist Norberto Kepi's work. He has been able to develop a psychological science that provides a clear map of what's going on in the human psyche for the first time in history, and which can also be applied to the structures and processes of society. Because after all, society is developed out of the belief structures and worldviews of the human beings that compose it. And so, society suffers from the same distortions and inversions that we do. I actually think this applicability of psychological understanding to all of humankind's structures is unprecedented in our history, and therefore of great value to we who are struggling to understand the world. My guest today is engineer Cesar Sauce, a frequent contributor to this podcast. Cesar, back in 2002, Peter Lindemann wrote an article called "Where in the World is All the Free Energy?" the title of our podcast today. And he says in this article that in the late 1880s, trade journals in the electrical sciences were predicting free electricity in the near future. And then what happened? In the midst of this technological explosion, where did the energy breakthroughs go? Was all of this excitement about free electricity just wishful thinking that never came about, actually? What in the world is going on here?
This is a very good question. Because we do not see these free energy engines running around all over our cities and freeing us from this pollution, you know, we have the tendency to believe that these things are not true. But we never argue if they are like refraining from saying the true reality of what's going on. For example, I am an engineer, and for years and years I hear about many amazing inventions that have been achieved since the beginning of the last century. Just to cite some of them, Nikola Tesla is one of the first inventors who solved the problem of the energetic problem, because he devised a complete system of wireless transmission of electricity. And he even made the plans and he put a unit to work. He made many experiments, and these experiments, they work properly.
Yeah. There's many people, I'm sure, listening have never heard of Nikola Tesla. This is an extraordinary thing. There's a tiny little plaque with his name on it at Niagara Falls, the very first hydroelectric plant in the world that he created, that he saw in his imagination when he was a 14-year-old boy. And then 20 years later, he built it exactly as he'd conceived it in his mind. So this was a great genius, invented the alternating current electrical system that powers every city in the world today. Yeah. His patents today are worth trillions of dollars, not billions, trillions.
Yes, he has more than 700 patents.
Yeah. Most people have never heard of Nikola Tesla. So you're saying a name and this whole idea of free energy that he created, wireless transmission of electricity and all of these kind of things. Most people will say, well, I never heard anything about that, so how do I know you're not just taking this from some fringe site on the internet? Well, what's the basis for what you're talking about? Because I know there are many experiments that have never seen the light of day.
So it's very clear to see that in the very beginning of the 20th century, science had two lines to follow. One line stated that energy was the basis of everything.
And energy would not just be electromagnetic energy, but
this source of energy, the ether energy that Nikola Tesla studied and made many inventions based on this. And the other line of the science developed in a way of believing that everything was material. Matter was the source of everything. So we had two different, very distinct ways. And science preferred to accept the version of the materialistic approach, because this way they can control things. This is very much linked to the pathology we have of theomania. Human beings have the hidden desire to control the universe, and this is unconscious. And because of this hidden unconscious, everybody, from the people in power to the common people on the streets, we hold the same pathology. But one act in the sense of achieving it, and the others, they assume a more passive attitude, but they agree with the ones in the power. And so the materialistic line followed throughout the entire century until today. But as we see, if you keep studying matter, you split matter more and more and more and more, you arrive to the point of having to study energy closely, the link between energy and matter. And this link, for you to study it properly, you have to jump, to give a jump in our science. And you have to review the entire basis of our materialistic science.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a bit, because this is the essence of Dr. Norberto Kepi's view that we study and spread on this radio program, this podcast, that Dr. Kepi is trying to unify physics again. Physics has been split for many years. The study of metaphysics, the old philosophers, connected the material world with the more transcendental world. And that got split along the way throughout history, where the transcendental world, the world of philosophy, theology, was split from the world of material science. So science today believes that energy comes from the material. What Kepi's trying to tell us is that there's a prior energy before the material that creates the material. Can you explain that a bit? Because that's a really fundamental point for us to understand here.
Science today believes that matter and energy are equivalent. Dr. Kepi says that matter is energy, but not in a horizontal relationship, in a vertical relationship. Whenever you have matter, you will have for sure energy there, contained in there. And this Einstein would agree, of course. And all physicists agree. But what the physicists don't see, and they are reluctant to believe and to accept, is that when you don't have matter, energy is there too. You see? And this energy is not inside particles, like quantum physics want to believe. They want to believe that all the energy we can study comes from very, very tiny particles. And if these particles are not found in our material world, they would be found in a kind of virtual world, but they have to be particles. So scientists always have this approach from the lesser to the greater.
And Kepi is saying that the energy exists with there is energy that exists without the material.
Exactly.
Talk about that energy, that world, that energetic world. How do you see that? How does Kepi see that?
Well, Richard, we have to use philosophy here, because this comes from the concept of nothing. For example, nothing doesn't exist. So what exists is the everything, is the whole. So there is no such thing we can call nothing. Dr. Kepi calls nothing, you know what? Neurosis, psychosis is nothing. When you deny the whole, then you fall into nothing. This idea can be pretty easily applied to science. It's not because you remove all matter from space that we will have an empty space. Of course, physics today believes that the space itself is energy. Space itself is energy. But it is like a mixture of particles and energy. Dr. Kepi says that this comes from metaphysics. If you have intelligence, it's because there is a superior intelligence behind you. If you have love, it's because there is a superior love behind you. So all kinds of things that can possibly exist in the universe. There is such thing bigger than that, more organized than that, who's behind that thing, you see?
Fairly recently, back in July, I read a little article in Discover magazine. And I didn't understand it very well. I wrote it in my book, the comment from the magazine, and I didn't understand it until I started to read it again the other day. And then because of the learning that I'm doing here in Brazil through our podcast, my work with people like you, I could understand a little bit better and provide a bit of an explanation. So Discover magazine said this: all species on Earth use DNA to encode genetic information. They all use RNA molecules as messengers to transfer the information from DNA to cellular factories called ribosomes, which then build proteins, which in turn drive our metabolisms and form the structures of our cells. In short, every species seems descended from a common ancestor whose attributes define what scientists mean when they say life as we know it. The key words here are, every species seems descended from a common ancestor. Now, the point I want to make is that this is a materialistic view, that if everything has the same basic DNA genetic structure, DNA cellular structure, if everything has that, it must come from a common material source. But with Kepi's science, we would say we do descend from a common source, but that source is an energetic reality beyond what we are. We would call it in this program, we would call it God. So this is how they misinterpret. Because they're so oriented to the material level, our science today, they see the commonality as example of a physical commonality, not a prior energetic commonality.
Yes, Richard, that's why when we study the DNA of a monkey, for example, it differs only 2.5% from the human DNA. But in fact, when you analyze the two species grown up, you see they are completely different. Human beings are able to create things monkeys would never think of because they do not think the way we think, you see? And what you said is very right, because the DNA, the first picture of the DNA taken in the early 50s by Rosalind Franklin in England, show that the DNA, in the middle of the DNA, there is a luminous point, which means the DNA is more energetical. And using these so-called Kirlian photographs were in high tension, were able to photograph the bioenergy around a physical body, we can see that when a person is sick, there is no light around that sick organ. This shows very clearly that sickness can be analogous to pathology, to lack of energy. We are like a radio. If we are in tune with this energy, this essential energy, we are healthy. If we are not in tune with it, we get sick.
Yes, in fact, one of Kepi's fundamental points when he talks about energy is that all pathology, this would be all human pathologies like envy, like arrogance, like decadence, all of these, destructivity, all pathology results from a loss of essential energy. So pathology is an opposition to this essential field, and our whole scientific world is suffering from this right now, this exclusion of the essential world from the study of energy.
There is a famous quantum physicist called Amit Goswami. He wrote a work in which he states that if physicists accepted again the idea of the ether, which they abandoned in the beginning of the century, things in physics would be much easier today. Everybody knows that, but they are reluctant to accept that because they will have to change the whole basis of physics. But they know what's wrong. And what is wrong in physics? Its very name, physics, shows that it can only study what is physical. You see, they will have to give primacy to what is physical.
The point of our podcast today, Cesar, is to try to make a connection between the energetic developments that have been excluded from our society, from our experience, because of this scientific view. Well, there's two reasons, right? The scientific view that everything comes from material, but also there's a socio-pathological view that the ones in power don't permit the freer forms of energy and their inventions to be manifest.
There is a very important example, Richard, to be said here in the program. When we are developing from a kid to an adult, we pass by three phases: oral, anal, and genital. This Freud had said, you know. And the worst of all these three phases is the anal phases. It is called anal sadic phase. In this anal sadic phase that goes from 2 to 4 years old, the child wants the toy of the other child, not for him to have pleasure and play with it, but his pleasure comes from the fact that the other one will not have pleasure. If you grown up as an adult and you keep this attitude, you will change the toy for the money. And we kids, if we were kids and liked to play with toys, today as adults we like to play with money. And so the other person who is in this anal phase, he will try to take our money for him, but his pleasure will be to see you suffering. And this is exactly what is going on in society today. The ones, the masters of this wild capitalism we see today, billions and billions of people in completely poverty, and very few ones with all the goods. This we can see very clear, this anal sadistic phase into play.
We did an analysis of this. I did with Claudia Pacheco. We looked in one of our podcasts on the psychoanalysis of society. We applied these three phases to various cultures and countries. Yeah. This was interesting. Some people, all of us, we get stuck in these introductory phases of development that we should pass through,
exactly. But
sometimes we don't. And the anal sadistic phase, describe this a little more, because this is what controls our economic system almost totally, isn't it?
Yes. This anal sadistic phase, it can develop into paranoid state of being and a psychopathy as well. And people in power, they are greed because they cannot see other people enjoying life.
This is unconscious mostly, right?
Of course, it is unconscious. Sometimes it's conscious, but it's very easy to pinpoint people like that.
This guy is obviously a psychopath, yes.
But this is a pathology. And they want, because they do not use their own being, their own goods. They think they are inverted, and they think they need goods from outside to compensate their lack of being. So they start to get things from everyone else. And when they see somebody happy, they feel envious of that, because this happy person shows to them what they are doing to themselves. So they want to take all the goods from the others so the others can be unhappy, and then they feel relieved. They feel pleasure with that. And this is interesting because we are not as pathological as these people in power. So that's why we do not understand their minds. When we see that there are people making traffic of children, you say, oh God, this is too much. I can't believe such a thing. But there are people who do that. There are people who are evil enough to do that. And we cannot be so naive. You see, things in the world are like this. We have options. And some people, they opt to be very evil.
So in this sense, this anal sadistic phase, if somebody's locked into that and they have power and they have influence, if they see something that will bring more benefits and take away their advantages, they'll want to stop that.
Exactly that, Richard. And this is what is going on with the free energy devices today. First of all, there is a monopoly of money going on. which is very easy to see, really. Big families like the federal bank in the United States, they print the money, and these banks, this group of 11 banks, if I'm not wrong, they belong to families. They do not belong to the people of the United States. So these families, they print the money. So if you want to borrow money, but from them, you cannot trade like gold or precious stones or cattle, because this you could have on your own. But you have to get money, and money are they who print it. So you are in their control. They create the social situations, the crisis they want. And so in terms of the petrol, speaking about the petrol today, petrol is ruining our planet because it's polluting everywhere. We have the problem of the CO2, which Al Gore made a wonderful documentary about that. But the thing is, petrol is not combustible. Petrol is an economic index with which these big families manipulate people and control people. We must stop with this idea that we need petrol to run our cars, to run our industries, because we have hundreds of different new methods to use.
Like what?
Like not only what I mentioned, Nikola Tesla with his wireless lightning, but also Thomas Bearding had developed a scalar theory based on Tesla's discoveries. He had many inventions on electromagnetic motors. Victor Schaumburg in Austria, back in 1940s, he developed new technologies based on vortexes, like a hurricane. When you see a twister, you see things going up in the middle. It's because there is a suction force, and this suction force is a force we never use. And he developed vehicles which could fly with this technology. Thomas Townsend Brown, who worked for the government, the American government, he developed the relationships between electricity and gravity. The electrogravity principle comes from him. With electricity properly applied to an object, you can make this object float, Richard. So we have amazing possibilities for transportation into space or aerial around our planet.
In a more sort of mundane example, not as exotic as these, we have the electric car. And just last year, there was a documentary released called Who Killed the Electric Car? And it's very interesting. It was developed by General Motors, was made available for lease in Southern California after the California Air Resources Board passed their zero emissions vehicles mandate in 1990. And then it shows their reversal of this mandate after they had lawsuits from, guess who? Automobile manufacturers, the oil industry, and the George Bush administration. Because who's on the George Bush administration? Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Andrew Card are all former executives and board members of oil and auto companies.
Yes, and so they are the ones who have more interest to continue this monopoly of petrol.
And it's very interesting because now the big movement here in Brazil, we have this big movement for ethanol, you know, to grow sugarcane, which, by the way, destroys completely the soil. And people are destroying all their crops in Brazil to plant sugarcane so they can get the money from export of ethanol to the United States and other countries. We're seeing this kind of technology when we have all of these free energy technologies. There are things much cleaner, much better for the environment, much better for everybody around them. This is an extraordinary thing.
Yes, Richard, and we know here in Brazil that the northeast part of Brazil is a desert because we had a period of plantation of sugar in Brazil back in the 18th century. And so we are promoting exactly that, the desertification of the rest of our country. Brazil, as you know, is one of the richest countries in the world for agriculture, and we have plenty of space for that. But now I ask you one thing. Why the government is not asking for people's money to finance this production? They are asking for mega investors' money to invest here in Brazil, including the United States and that George Soros, that mega investor. So where will this money go? after it to the Brazilian people?
No.
Not at all.
This is very clear.
So as everybody knows, outside Brazil, our cinema and our television and international television shows a lot of problems here in Brazil. But the problem is that Brazil is badly administrated because of corruption from both here inside in connection, especially with this corruption outside Brazil, is a trap. People want to get out of the situation. It's really complicated. This whole system, structure, economic system, is holding Brazil back in its development.
And you know, the whole world, in a sense, is trapped in this this inverted economic system. We have letters from people in the United States to our podcast, people in Africa, people from Asia, and all of them are saying the same thing, or not the same comments, but they're making the same points that they had never seen the world this way until they started listening to this podcast. And so I think the whole world is trapped in this inverted, anal-satic economic system that doesn't let us escape.
Exactly, Richard. This is the main point of your podcast, and I think it's brilliant because of that. You give a perspective of what goes on inside the human beings. We make a pact of slavery with these people in power. How come free energy will be available for us if we want to be slaves internally? We want to be slaves of our pathologies. So what will I do with free energy if I do not want to be free? This is my problem, my internal problem. And then we allow free reign for these people, and now sadistic people in power, to do whatever they want, not only to us, but to the planet, as we are seeing.
So our role as the common people then, what is our role? Our role obviously is to wake up, to become conscious of this. But how can we sort of fight against this? What's our solution? How do we begin to move out of this? It seems hopeless to escape from this. What do we do? How can we get out of it?
Richard, I will give you my personal experience. I graduated an engineer and studied physics in university. I went abroad outside Brazil, and I lived there 11 years in many different countries. I have seen a lot in my life. And I have seen there are many good people willing to help, willing to change their situation, the situation of the world. I know there is that. But the only thing that really calmed me down was Dr. Norberto Cappi's work. And with this discovery of inversion, the knowledge about this inversion was essential to my understanding of the way things are working in society today. It was marvelous. And this is what I suggest to your listeners, to ask for books, Dr. Cappi's books available. We have here, we have some on the internet. I think you can send them. And they can read, and they can have much more information about that, even about their personal pathology they have no idea about. But when you see one pathology in yourself and you accept to see it, it's like a new world opens up to your eyes, in front of your eyes, and you can see things in a different way.
Kepi's books are available through this podcast, rich@richjonesvoice.com. Any more information you'd like to, just write me. I'd love for you to know more about Kepi's outstanding work. This is Thinking with Somebody Else's Head. I'm Richard Lloyd-Jones. Talk to you next week.